worked and some that didn't. You'll even hear about what it was like on some of those incredible first test flights of experimental aircraft that he volunteered to fly. Dick soloed and earned his driver's license on his 16th birthday. As a tactical air command fighter pilot, during his 2 decades in the Air Force, Dick flew 325 combat missions in Vietnam. He's been awarded the Silver Star, 5 Distinguished Flying Crosses, 16 Air Medals, and the Purple Heart. It is my honor to introduce Dick Rutan.
Wow. Good evening. Welcome. It's a great show. The best air show in the world, right? Fellow EAAers, home builders, fellow pilots. Fellow warriors. You know, our flag is a pretty precious thing. And what it symbolizes is who we are and our freedoms and all those things that we enjoy. And if you suffer me just a minute, would all the veterans or the current active duty people please stand up? Please stand up. Okay, stay standing, gentlemen, ladies. Now, if you enjoy all those freedoms that we enjoy so much, those gentlemen that have stood before us, they can accept the gratitude of a grateful nation.
Wisconsin. Welcome back to Theater in the Woods on EAA Radio.
Projects that worked and some that didn't. You'll even hear about what it was like on some of those incredible first test flights of experimental aircraft that he volunteered to fly. Dick soloed and earned his driver's license on his 16th birthday. As a tactical air command fighter pilot, during his 2 decades in the Air Force, Dick flew 325 combat missions in Vietnam. He's been awarded the Silver Star, 5 Distinguished Flying Crosses, 16 Air Medals, and the Purple Heart. It is my honor to introduce Dick Rutan.
Wow. Good evening. Welcome. It's a great show. The best air show in the world, right? Fellow EAAers, home builders, fellow pilots. Fellow warriors. You know, our flag is a pretty precious thing. And what it symbolizes is who we are and our freedoms and all those things that we enjoy. And if you suffer me just a minute, would all the veterans or the current active duty people please stand up? Please stand up. Okay, stay standing, gentlemen, ladies. Now, if you enjoy all those freedoms that we enjoy so much, those gentlemen that have stood before us, they can accept the gratitude of a grateful nation. And I salute you, gentlemen. Thank you very much for what we have. And as long as we're free, as long as we're free and have all the nice things that we enjoy, there's always somebody around to try to take them away from us. And as long as we're strong, that'll never happen. Great country. And all you foreign visitors, welcome too, and this is great place, and you're going to enjoy this, and enjoy meeting people from different countries. Now, Dick Rutan unscripted. You're in trouble. Anyway, there's a lot of things that happened. I got shot down out of North Vietnam on fire, but there wasn't any video of it, so some other things happened. But anyway, I got 3 clips I want to show you, and it's about there's some really good video of it, and I think you'll enjoy it. And that we don't talk about it too much, but it was kind of neat. And it's all on video. You can see it happen live. Now, We talked about our parents. Now, Bert and I were really two radically different people. And now that I got older and I was thinking, well, how did this come to be, that these two individuals, these two brothers that are totally different? It all goes back to how we were raised. Now, as a parent, and I'm a parent, and I have grandkids, and the tendency of a parent is that you want to take care of your siblings. You want to protect them from harm. And I guess that's good in a way, but maybe, and I don't want you to go and do dumb things now, but maybe you're denying them a couple of things that would really help them out as their character develops. Now, Bert and I think the two parents got together one day and they says, you know, most people have normal characteristics of this and that. And they thought, well, when Dick was born and Bert, we'll take something away from Bert and give it to Dick. And we'll take something away from Dick and give it to Bert. And what Bert got out of it is he was really smart. Or at least he thinks he's smart. And a lot of people call him the genius, my brother, the genius. But what they took away from Bert and gave to me was a sense of adventure. And I love adventure. Adventure is the essence of life. And my dad told me that later on, he says, you know, Dick, I kind of had an inkling about what you were going to be in life because, and I watched you explore the backwoods of Oregon in your diapers. I thought that was really interesting about how this developed. But basically, what those two parents did, I can never remember a single time in Bert and I growing up that my parents says, no, you cannot do that because it's too dangerous. Anything we had the guts to try, we could go and do it. And I often look back at that and I says, well, how could they not be worried about that? You know, the biggest thing I wanted to do was, in high school, I was riding motorcycles. And I had an old Triumph 650 twin used thing, kind of beat up. And I found that it was a lot more exciting running away from the local cops in town because I could get away from them because I'd drive down the grape roads. And up in Southern California around Fresno, they had a lot of grapes and stuff and I could get away from them because a car couldn't go down, but my motorcycle could. And when I graduated from high school, I wanted to take a big trip. Now think about this, a kid just gets out of high school and I got this old motorcycle, so I get a duffel bag and have a sleeping bag and some other things on the back and not very much money. And my dad gave me a credit card for fuel for the car or for the motorcycle. And me and this other idiot, we take off. And it's in the San Joaquin Valley and it's really hot because it's summertime and you know, school is getting out. But we drove north up to Sacramento and then we headed east out over the pass that goes, the Donner Pass that goes down into Reno. But they had a big snowstorm out there over Winnemucca and stuff, and it was really cold. And so we really froze to death. And anyway, my headlight quit working, and so I joined up with another motorcycle, and we were going, and we're driving across a Salt Lake thing from, you know, from the Reno area out into Salt Lake City, out across that big, and it was raining like a cow peeing on a flat rock. Now, I didn't have a headlight, so I rode in close trail with a guy that did have a headlight. And I remember there, and I put a Band-Aid around my mouth, but when it got wet, I couldn't breathe through it. So I took a toothpick to hold it open, and then going, trying to fly formation with this guy. He's the only guy that had a headlight, and we're bombing out across the desert late at night. And I remember that the water would splash up against your legs, the fore part of your leg, and then it would gather there, and it would trickle down and fill your boots up. But anyway, I was out for 2 weeks and we went to Oklahoma and we had a good time and I met a nice, real nice friend. She was really cute. And in the Grand Canyon. And we had a lot of fun. But anyway, I thought about that. What were the parents thinking when they let this kid go off on a motorcycle for a 2 week trip? Nobody ever said anything. Or I'd go out and like I said, sold it at 16 and we got a hold of a J3 Cub and a 7AC air knocker. And of course you want to challenge yourself. And if the weather was bad, hey, that was great because it was a real challenge. And during that year I had to wait before I soloed, and the day that I got a private license I could take people, and Bert and I both did this, is that the two friends of ours, we drive out to the little Dinuba Alta Airport And we'd flip a coin to see who was going to drive to Sequoia Airport, which is an abandoned World War II training field, and who was going to fly the airplane. And we'd have a race to see who got out there first. And so we'd land, and both of us would get in the airplane and fly illegally and do all kinds of dumb stuff. And then the other one had to drive the car back while the other guy flew the airplane back. And then there was Friday night football games. And I got really good at cutting toilet paper. You know, you throw it out, big long stream, and you turn and cut it. But my dad got a lot of phone calls from irate farmers about their fields being toilet papered, and the principal about dropping toilet paper out over the Friday night football games. So that's kind of what happened, my brother and I. I was 5 years older than him, and I'd fly model airplanes and crash them, and he'd go out and fix them, see, and he wanted to do it different. And so all of a sudden, this character was developing. I didn't care about building them. I just built them, and I had to go out and do all kinds of wild stuff with them. But he would fix them and make them different, and he'd do some really unique things with it. So since, remember, he was the smart one, and I was the adventure one. And he went to college, and I couldn't wait. Because I remember in the 50s, I could look out over the skies there in the San Joaquin Valley, and high in the blue sky, I could see a contrail going. Now, they were so high that you couldn't see the airplane in front of it. But I knew that whoever was sitting at the pointy end of that contrail had one heck of a view. And I bloody well could not wait to get up there. Now, there was a defining moment in my life that my mother, when I was a little kid, other than the fact when I was a little tiny kid, she took me for an airplane ride, which they couldn't afford, out of Fleabob, Riverside. Anyway, in a J-5 Cub, and I was so little that I didn't want to sit down because I couldn't see anything, so I stood up and held onto the pilot's seat, and the stuffing was coming out, and I could still smell the smell of that kind of moldy insulation. And I remember looking out, and the tires didn't have any tread on it. And I remember some guy came out and turned the propeller over, and we bounced out across that grass field there that morning. And for a handful of minutes, we circled over Riverside, and that little kid looked out the window, and what he saw would change his life forever. Because he was totally, completely fascinated with aviation. He knew a lot about aviation, but he didn't know the square root of anything else about anything else. So this fascination with airplanes and aviation denied us, probably both of us, the opportunity for a more balanced character development. Now, I could tell you anything about airplanes, but how you did an algebra problem, maybe I was a little weak on that. But after that, my mother took me to March Air Force Base back in those days, in the early 50s. And I remember going in there, and there was a lot of military airplanes. And I'll never forget this one guy. It was an RF-84F. And it was a swept wing, early jet. Some of you graybeards know what an F-84 is. And it had a big nose on it with windows. And this guy had put scantily clad females in these windows. And I thought, wow, that's really cool. But the neatest thing was, this pilot in his flight suit, his G suit, he was standing in front of this airplane, and this little kid walked up to him and looked at him, and I thought, man, this guy is from another planet. God, would I like to do that? But in my mind, I thought, who am I? I could never do something like that. Look at him, he flies his jet, and he's got these neat clothes on. And I was looking up at him, and my mother comes and says, Dick, would you like to do that? And I says, oh, boy, would I? She says, well, and then I said something that really got her attention. And I told her, I says, Mom, I don't think that I could ever grow up to be something like that. And my mother grabbed me by the nape of the neck, and she told me something. She says, if you really want to do that, you can. And she convinced me that I could do that, but it's not going to be easy. Now, two things that happen. One is, you develop an exciting goal, something you're really excited about. And we did this in the Voyager project. A really exciting goal, and then you can do anything you can dream about, she would tell us, and it's all you had to do is manage the motivation. Now, she happened to keep reminding me, which really wasn't difficult, about what was on the pointy end of that contrail, and what I need to do today to graduate from sixth grade or eighth grade, and I had to do my homework, and I wanted to go out and do other things, and she would say, you want to be a fighter pilot? You get your tail in there and do your homework. And so she did two things. The exciting goal, he convinced me that we really could do that, and then she managed the motivation. And she did that to both of her sons. And look what happened. Now my brother, he goes off to be smart at college, and I went off and went in the Air Force. And 20 years later, we came back together in the little town of Mojave in the high desert of California. And Mojave has a little town, and it has a big can of two of the most important things in your life. The can's about this big around, it's about this tall, and it's sealed on top. And when you were born, everybody alive is issued this can, and it's yours. And what is inside is two things, and they start with F. Freedom and flexibility. And how you handle your freedom and flexibility will determine what you can accomplish in life. The key to be able to do great things. Now you can empty that can by selling dope or something, or you can empty the can by getting too friendly with your high school sweetheart. That'll empty the can pretty quick. But if you manage that properly, or you invest it properly, like when I went in the Air Force, I invested the whole can and went into aviation cadets. Boy, they did bad things to me. I wanted to go home to my mother. But I was too scared to walk down the hall to the orderly room to say I wanted to go home. But I kept remembering that contrail and what it looked like. I'm writing a book. And the book is called The Next 5 Minutes. And as I went back in life, I realized that there was a lot of things that happened that would have the next 5 minutes. And the book starts like this. And it described where I am. Of course, we're at Edwards Air Force Base, and it's 8 o'clock in the morning on December 14th of 1986. And I'm sitting in a real small little frail cockpit that's about this wide and about this deep. And I'm kind of laying down, and there's instruments and pilot-type levers inside this cockpit. And Gina, she's laying on her back because she had no seat right beside me, and I could look down in her face. And at the end of this program, we never knew how dangerous this thing was going to be, or its flying qualities, or whether it would even get airborne with putting 25% more fuel on board than it ever had before. And there was a big argument between the smart guy that went to college and the other guy that was a pretty neat pilot about how much fuel to put on board for this morning. And after that was over and the fuel load was determined and put on board, it was lined up on runway 4, the longest runway in the free world, and at the other end was a 7-mile Muroc dry lake. The weather was ideal. Cold, calm, both engines were running. Squeaked the mic button and it said, "Edwards Tower, this is Voyager 1, we're ready to go." And the tower comes back and he says a classic clearance. And he says, "Voyager 1, this is Edwards Tower." He says, "ATC clears Voyager 1 from Edwards Air Force Base to Edwards Air Force Base via flight plan route, maintain 8,000, cleared for takeoff, and Godspeed." And I acknowledged the clearance and I sat there for a handful of seconds. And my mind would cast back at that mother that day, and cast back that when Bert had the idea we could actually do this, and the 5 years that we took to be in this place right now. And I knew that I had about 3 chances out of 5 of being dead in the next 5 minutes. Now, when you're into it too much and there's a lot of volunteers, they come out to watch you, and there's no way you can get out of it. So I pushed both of those throttles up, and those two little tiny engines came up to full power and released a little tiny brake on the nose wheel and wondered what the next 5 minutes of my life was going to be like. And the rest is history. Anyway, I do a museum talk almost every day, and you're welcome to come down and see that, and right in front of the Voyager, and we talk about different aspects of the Voyager flight, so be sure you do that.